It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. On Tuesday, March 15th, journalist Kurt Guyette is speaking at Point Park University. He's a Pitt graduate and the lone investigative reporter employed by a branch of the American Civil Liberties Union, in this case, the ACLU of Michigan. It led to his breaking one of the biggest stories of 2015, the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. It began the year before when emergency managers switched Flint to a cheaper source of drinking water to save money. It resulted in a lead poisoning situation that still hasn't been solved. Kurt Guyette joins us by phone. Kurt, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
How did you get onto this story in the first place?
Well, I was hired with the specific intent of investigating and writing about issues connected with Michigan's emergency manager law. And because Flint was under the control of a state-appointed emergency manager, I was keeping an eye on it. And the problems with the water began to show themselves almost immediately after the switch was made from the Detroit system to the Flint River. But in January of 15, the state disclosed that the water for many months previously had contained elevated levels of a carcinogenic byproduct of chlorine called TTHMs. And so I started going up to Flint and attending meetings at that point because people were outraged that they were being exposed to a carcinogen and not being told about it. And as a result of that reporting was in July of 15, given an internal EPA memo that sounded the first real alarm about lead in Flint's drinking water.
So suddenly, you're not just following the story, you're in the middle of it. What was that like?
Well, at that point, it didn't feel unusual at all that after the memo was published, the state strongly denied that there was any problem with Flint's water. So the question became, how do we get to the truth? And the answer was a really unique collaboration between the people of Flint, scientists at Virginia Tech University, and the ACLU of Michigan, where we all combined forces to do an independent, scientifically rigorous test of Flint's water. And that was done in August of 15. Virginia Tech analyzed the results from 277 sample kits that were distributed to homes all throughout Flint and collected and sent back to Virginia Tech. Analysis of those samples showed lead levels much higher than what the city and state were claiming.
Was there a sense that you had that this was a crisis that could have been avoided?
Oh, it absolutely could have been avoided. It could have been avoided had the state, which had complete control over the city of Flint, not made the catastrophic decision to begin using the Flint River. The Flint Water Treatment Plant was completely unprepared for the difficult task of treating the river water, which is highly corrosive, and that problem was compounded by the almost inexplicable fact that the state decided not to add mandatory corrosion control chemicals to the water. So they went to a water source that was many times more corrosive than the source that it had been on for about 50 years. And at a point when corrosion control chemicals were more needed than ever, the state, for whatever reason, decided not to use those chemicals, which led to the corrosion problem that caused the leaching of lead from pipes into the city's drinking water.
So then what did it take to call out the failure of Flint and the state of Michigan to protect its citizens?
Well, it took a very courageous person within the EPA, water expert Miguel Del Toro, to write that memo and leak it. It took the citizens of Flint and Virginia Tech and the ACLU of Michigan to conduct independent tests of the water to show what lead levels really were. It took me conducting an independent investigation that revealed how the city and state were essentially cheating on the test in order to be able to make the false claim that the water met federal levels. And finally it took a very courageous doctor at Hurley Medical Center who, after the Virginia Tech results were released, conducted her own study looking at the lead blood levels in children under the age of 5 before and after the switch to the river. And when she did that, she found that the percentage of children with elevated levels of lead in their blood doubled after the switch to the river. And in the parts of the city where our test found the highest levels of lead in the water, she found that the percentage of kid with elevated levels of lead in their blood almost tripled after the switch to the river. So it really took the work of a lot of different people, but primarily it was the residents of Flint who refused to believe the lie that their water was safe, just kept pushing until they were able to get to the truth and expose it.
And Kurt, what happened to the whistleblower involved in this that was the source for your story?
He was initially slapped down. Someone in the EPA told a Flint resident that he had, quote, been taken care of or handled, I forget the exact word, and he was taken off the Flint assignment. But his boss, the head of the Region 5 EPA office, resigned as a result of her mishandling of the whole Flint situation, and he's now back working in Flint, much to the relief of Flint residents who rightfully see him as a hero.
And how illustrative is this episode of the importance of investigative journalism? If you hadn't been available to report this, we might never have known about it. Things might have continued in Flint.
Yeah, I think that the people of Flint were so determined to get to the truth that it would eventually have come out. But I think it definitely shows the power of the truth, you know, that the residents, Virginia Tech, and me all working together did tell the truth. And telling that truth eventually led to major changes. And, you know, it's gratifying to have been a part of something like that.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I am talking with reporter and journalist Kurt Guyette, who is speaking at Point Park University tomorrow night. He is the lone investigative reporter employed by a branch of the American Civil Liberties Union. I'm curious, Kurt, what your situation enabled you to do that another reporter's situation might not have.
Well, by the virtue of the fact of my grant, I'm given the time and the resources to do, you know, deep investigations. I've been working on the Flint story almost exclusively for almost a year now. And, you know, with the cutbacks in the mainstream media, that kind of time is not afforded to reporters. And I also had a good budget to pay for Freedom of Information Act requests, which amounted to many thousands of dollars in the course of reporting this story. And smaller papers typically don't have that kind of money to spend on obtaining government records. So, you know, both the time and the resources are something that I have that a lot of other reporters don't have.
And how is it that the ACLU of Michigan has its own investigative reporter?
You know, the leadership here had the idea of applying for a grant from the Ford Foundation to hire an investigative reporter. They used as one of the justifications the cutbacks going on in the mainstream and said that there's a void here that the ACLU could help fulfill or help fill. And also the fact that the focus on Michigan's emergency manager law is an issue that's very important to the ACLU because in Michigan, these emergency managers essentially usurp all the authority of duly elected local officials. and it's really a taking away of democracy and replacing it with an austerity-driven autocracy. And the leadership here at the ACLU of Michigan believe that something that extreme deserved a very intense, be put under a very intense microscope so that it could be closely examined what the effects of it are.
Might this become a new path for enterprising journalists like yourself?
Well, when we began this, because this was very much an experiment when we started out, one of the things that we thought would show that it was successful would be if other ACLU branches tried to replicate what we were doing. That hasn't happened yet, but certainly as a result of the Flint and all the notoriety it's been getting, there is a lot of interest among other ACLU branches to possibly try and do the same thing. Certainly, I think we proved what an asset having an investigative reporter on staff of the ACLU could be. So we'll see what happens. But you know, nonprofit journalism is thriving. You have organizations like ProPublica is a nonprofit. Mother Jones Magazine is a nonprofit. Here in Michigan, we have a very good news outlet called Bridge Magazine, which is an online publication that is a nonprofit. So as the mainstream cuts back, the nonprofit world is stepping up and doing a lot of innovative things in terms of journalism. And what's going on here is part of that.
And you've also produced a mini documentary that is related to this. I believe we can see it on YouTube.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we've done several mini documentaries, but we just released a 45-minute documentary that provides what I think is a comprehensive look at what happened, especially last year in Flint, and how citizens came together in order to fight to get to the truth about their water. It's called Here's to Flint, and people can find a link to it at the ACLU of Michigan website, which is aclumich.org.
aclumich.org.
Correct.
And before we wrap this up, I'm curious, as I mentioned earlier, this situation in Flint is by no means resolved. What do you see happening with this situation going forward?
Well, right now, the newly elected mayor of Flint is trying to move full speed ahead with removing the lead service lines, which is, service line is the pipe that runs from the water main going down the middle of the street to the house. And in older homes, they are often made of lead. And so much damage has been done to the city's infrastructure because the water was so corrosive that they're having a hard time getting it within levels that are acceptable by the federal government. And the infrastructure is really just so badly damaged, the mayor is saying we just need to move full speed ahead and replace all these lead service lines.
So they're going to replace all the lines, and then as far as the source of the water, has that been switched back to Lake Huron?
That's correct. That's where the Detroit system draws its water from. And last October, because of the public outcry over everything that had been revealed, the governor of Michigan, Rick Snyder, was forced to allow the city of Flint to return to the Detroit system. So it has a cleaner, safer source of water now, but people are still drinking bottled water because, as I said, the infrastructure was so badly damaged that it's taken time to make it safe again.
And what are the things that you're going to continue to monitor as a journalist that you'll look into and, I guess, be the watchdog for as this situation tries to get corrected?
Well, one thing that's different now than last July when I first started reporting about this is the number of other media outlets that are paying very, very close attention to Flint and doing their own watchdog roles at this point. I have a lot of company in watching what's happening, but my focus at this point is still on getting to the truth about the decision-making behind the choice to go to the river in the first place. There's still a lot of information that has not come to light yet, and I'm still working on bringing it to light.
My guest has been journalist Kurt Guyette, who is speaking at Point Park University tomorrow, March 15th. He's a Pitt graduate and the lone investigative reporter employed by a branch of the American Civil Liberties Union, in this case the ACLU of Michigan. It led to his breaking one of the biggest stories of 2015, the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. He'll be talking about that in his talk, which is entitled From Flint to Your Faucet with Kurt Guyette, again, sponsored by Point Park University. Kurt Guyette, thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for so much for having me on, Paul. I'm really looking forward to being back in Pittsburgh.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.